Zach Heavy Robinson, metal. I've been pleased, Mike. What say you?
Well, you know, I was thinking about this because Bo brought this up because is he the most improved part of the team? Is that how you worded it?
Yes, I think okay. Something like that.
So I was thinking about it, and first of all, to answer this question, you have to kind of outlaw everybody else on offense, right? Because it all leads back to him. Like I could say Kyle Pitts. Well, a lot of that has to do with Zach Robinson's usage. Or yep. It's Tyler Allgeier who finally made his presence felt. Well, a lot of that has to do with Tyler Allgeier's usage. Is it Kirk Cousins who looked awful in week one? A lot of that has to do with Zach Robinson and what he's done with Kirk Cousins. So I think to answer your question, yes. I think there's way more branches to that tree, though.
As fans, we blame the player first. We always blame the coach, I feel like.
It's well,
that's
like, just a quarterback.
He's not being used right. Hold on. I've been told for years that the Falcons don't know how to use Kyle Pitts.
No.
I've been told for years that they don't know how to use Kyle Pitts. It's not a Kyle Pitts problem. It's a problem. And now it's a Zach Robinson problem.
Can I be honest? I think that's a positional thing. I think nobody, like, because you don't really look, it's hard to look at receivers and know if they're playing well to average people that aren't watching every rep. And they look at numbers. They look at catches. They look at yards. But, like, if you to kind of go against your point, when you talk about linemen, right, it's always like, he was a bust. You know what I mean? Like, you look at, like, first-round linemen, you're like, well, that guy was a bust. You don't ever point to the offensive line coach and say, well, he couldn't develop the guy.
Or the strength coach.
Right. You don't ever
work him out hard enough.
You don't ever point to, like, the defensive tackles and go, well, it might have been the defensive line coach. Like, no, it's just when you talk about receivers, yes, I'm agreeing. Okay. You go back to the coordinator and you're like, well, I don't know how to use them.
Grabbing at the low-hanging fruit.
Because it's the easy answer.
Asked a question said, hey, would you guys trade Kyle Pitts and a third-round pick for Max Crosby? And to the Raiders. And I wrote the guy back and I said, well, first off, they're not making that trade because they're not giving up just that for Max Crosby. So, and he goes, well, my thing is that Kyle Pitts could stretch the field for the Raiders. And I go, well, then why isn't he stretching the field here?
Yeah. No, I
and then I calmed down and tweet.
It has kind of, it seems like 36 tweets like that since the beginning of the year about trading Kyle Pitts and saying, well, get him out while he still has value. Like, when you look at what they got for Devontae Adams and Amari Cooper, I'm like, what value do you really think that Kyle Pitts holds in the team, you know, in the eye of other teams? Like, there is none.
People automatically think he'd be this highly coveted thing.
Draft slots have nothing to do in year four. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter that he was a fourth overall
or whatever.
Yeah, 100%.
It only matters if when he becomes a free agent and he seemingly lost his way with that team, that he'll get a second chance. First round and second round guys, actually even third, they get second chances quicker
a lot of those
than
guys,
later in the draft.
Especially at quarterback.
Yes, but this isn't a second chance moment.
Well, and my thing is, to your point, and I'll finish on this, you might as well, you want to buy low on Kyle Pitts, you might as well keep him here, right? If that's what your thought is. You might as well buy low the fact that he can kind of integrate himself into Zach's offense.
You know what I love what's happened to the NFL? It's become like the Major League Baseball trade deadline. Remember, the trade deadline in the NFL greeted with a chorus of yawns for the most part.
Yes, dude. There was, I think the 5 years I was with the Falcons, I think there was two trades. I think we made two trades, maybe three.
I've got a theory on that. I just think it's basically that we don't give guys time anymore, like coaches and GMs. If you don't win immediately, you're out. So I think there's
more. You see
more
that all across sports. Like when John Smoltz says, in today's age, they would have cast me aside a long time ago.
100% right. I just think the urgency to win or to you know, even make the playoffs or whatever is so much more now than it used to be. Used to be you would get 3, 4, 5 years to change your roster over, build up your team, bring in your own guys. You don't get that anymore. If Raheem Morris doesn't have a playoff run in the first 2 years, there's a chance he's not here a third year. And I don't want that, but I'm just telling you, I think that's a reality.
I don't think I have a problem with it as much as y'all might. To me, a lot of times when you have first-year coaches and or first-year quarterbacks or both, I think you can tell. I think you can kind of tell when it's working. Like, Jaden Daniels, a prime example. C.J. Stroud, prime example. On the other side, Frank Reich and Bryce Young, that was not working. Nope. Like, and so it's like, you might as well rip the Band-Aid off. And I know that David Tepper catches a lot of hell for it, but I still think it was the right decision over
Carolina. Well, the wrong decision – it's not the right decision because you made the wrong decision in the first place. You made the wrong decision by bringing in a coach and then telling him who he had to draft as the quarterback. That is where it all went wrong to begin with for them.
That's probably fair, too.
But I don't disagree that needed to go.
Sunday, Falcons, Seahawks, first four-game winning streak since 2019, perhaps, maybe, could be. I'm just saying, just run the damn ball, man. Have a sexy day. Please, Mike, and run the damn ball.
Mm. You have such an opportunity Sunday because you can win your fifth game of the year. You can win another conference game. The Saints are now 2-5 after last night. Tampa Bay has a tough Monday night game against Baltimore, yep, who seemingly found their way, and they're going to test that run defense of Tampa, and they're honestly going to they're going to test that defense in every way. And then you turn around and you go play Tampa the next week.
Hopefully they'll be softened up after that Monday night game.
Yeah.
Hopefully be a battered and bruised Tampa Bay.
I'm getting way ahead of myself. But think about this. You win your next two games and Tampa stumbles the next two games, you could have a two-game lead with the complete tiebreaker over the best team not named you in the division.
Can I tell you the one thing, though, as we head towards this weekend, obviously talking a lot about Seahawks-Falcons. The one thing that's not even really X's and O's related that scares me about this weekend is the extra rest days for them. Like, yeah, when you look historically at NFL games where the team has had a significant advantage in rest,
but they're still so banged up, though.
They are, but
they're arrested banged up.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, that's the thing is, like, you have banged up. Okay, you have to play. Let's just say you had to play a different offensive line, which they do. Yep. You got 3 extra days to get him in the playbook, to get him integrated. Yep. Like, it's not the same as, like, a short week Saints team that we saw last night that's having to plug and play guys. Like, that's shorthanded. Those are rest days. Those are big when you talk about the NFL.